Well, first of all, I want to say thank you for being here. Thanks to everybody for making time to be with us today. Summer can be, summer can be a bit of a busy time for everyone because people are zipping to and fro. Parents are home with their children. And then also they're out taking their vacations and going from here to there, attempting to do that, Liberty and the Pursuit of Happiness thing. And so sometimes we see lots of folks on Sundays, sometimes not so much. I want to start by thanking the whole crew who made ComFest. I heard you had to swim on Friday. Anybody here who swam on Friday? Yeah, okay, all right. Bill, thank you so much. I'm glad you survived. Did you have water wings? Water wings? I am. Yeah, and it rained so hard on Friday that they had to they canceled the entire festival for the day. And so, but I think our tent didn't fall apart. And so thanks to the whole crew. And then, let's see, who else worked during ComFest? Anybody else? Okay, thank you for all the folks who went and spent time at the booth. And I think Justin actually did all of the scheduling and was the man with the plan. So just big thanks to you for that. Because, I can't even begin to tell you how much, ComFest means to us. We've been part of ComFest for more than 20 years, and we feel really close to ComFest and the ideals of people helping people. So I'm really happy that we're able to be there every year. And I heard that we were also able to sell some of the beautiful T-shirts. You wouldn't mind modeling, would you, Aaron and Bill? Beautiful T-shirts, which you can now buy. So, yeah, and they're right over there. Thank you, Annie. Ta-da. Oh, yeah, she's going to do her Vanna. Yeah. You know, I gotta say I love you. Yeah, and the hats. Thank you, Rose, right? Yeah, fantastic hats. You know, I might not have been a believer on hats because I don't wear them. But you know, we sold more hats at KTD Monastery than anything. I mean, we sold them all out like that. So yeah, one size fits all. Whereas the T-shirts, so there's logic to it. Oh darn, logic always defeats me. So anyway, just you know, thanks to all of those folks. And then let's see, who else can I thank? Justin, I have a letter for you. This is actually $100, and you can give it to Steve when you see him next. Okay, and you can deliver it. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, okay. I know. Okay, good. All right. We have what is called the exchange of prisoners. I get mail for him, and he gets mail for me, and so we have an exchange. But this happened to me when I was at KTD. For the 10-day teaching, Marilyn and I were there, and I was selling T-shirts. We sat through the lunch hour at KTD Monastery. There were about maybe 75 to 80 people attending a program there every day. And we sat at the table and sold T-shirts and hats, and people would just walk up and hand us money. So it, and then I would be in the shrine room at KTD and people would just walk up to me and give me money. I guess you could say that being at KTD was, was a very good thing. So at any rate, but now, we're back here and, starting to do all kinds of things. We'll have, some updates for you on the building project, which you see back there. We'll have some updates for you on the building project in, probably, not next week, but the week after. And then, of course, everybody's invited to lunch. We're having lunch. Yes, there is such a thing as a free lunch, and we're doing it the 30th of July to celebrate our 40th anniversary. We'll do the luncheon upstairs in the social hall, and it will include an update on the building and an opportunity to fill out pledge form. So, you know, think of it as public television without the breaks. It will be one pledge break. Actually, no, we're going to have a good time eating and telling stories about the 40-year anniversary of the Columbus KTC. And in fact, let's see, is Jenny Faze here? Jenny? Yeah, there you are, former director. How many other former directors do we have here today? We got Jenny is here, and then Aaron is here, and then Kim is current director, so she's, hi, we're just saying hi to all the people who, and I'm here, I'm a former director, that's right. So, oh, that's right, I did do that. So, thanks to all of the folks, and I hope you can come and share a story from the history of the Columbus KTC. We won't tell stories like when Sidhu Rinpoche came in 94, and the electric was canceled that day because of a bill. Anyway, we won't talk about that. We won't talk about that particular incident, but we will talk about other things that that will be fun and interesting, and talk about the development of Buddhism in Columbus. So that's a little bit about, and then I have one more announcement, and then I'll get to the teaching. The Columbus KTC also figures in this major book. This is part of the Lama's Stay Fit package. The Lama stays fit. Well, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. The Lama stays fit by lifting things. And okay, this was published by our home monastery, Karma Triana Dharma Chakra, and KTD Publications, and it's called Dharma King. It's really heavy. Dharma King, the life of the 16th Chawan Karmapa in images. And I talked to the editor and publisher of this, and it's a fabulous book. This was given to us as a gift, right, by KTD? Kim had to carry it, so she got the benefit of the weightlifting first. And but what's really great is there's a little marker here, and am I supposed to keep this for safekeeping? Or okay, I'm going to keep this for safekeeping until we have a library to put it in. And this little mark here is where the book actually falls open, and there are pictures here from the 16th Karmapa's visit to Columbus, Ohio. When the 16th Karmapa visited Columbus, Ohio, the KTC, in 1980, there are pictures of him at the East Ballroom of the old Ohio State University Student Union doing the Vajra Crown Ceremony. There's also pictures from our previous center, which was located in a home in Linworth at the time, of Karmapa sitting on the throne in that little shrine room doing the protector ritual. And then two pages of black and white photos from when he went out and dedicated a tree at Dawes Arboretum. And so if you go to Dawes Arboretum today, there is a brass plaque in the Ginkgo Grove near the corner of Route 13 and then the northerly boundary of the Arboretum. There's a road that is the north boundary of the Arboretum. That's where the Ginkgo Grove is. You can still go up there and look at the plaque with a picture of His Holiness on it. And the words, Om Mani Padme Hum, the compassion mantra of Chenrezig. So that visitors and tourists will actually end up saying the mantra of compassion before they leave the area. So it's kind of nice. Anyway, so that's something that you can look at. We will have this at the anniversary party. So register now. Okay. Let's see. Okay. So today's talk is about the perfection of generosity, and it basically is talking about this sort of rare and unique opportunity that we have to be of benefit to others in our everyday life. A lot of folks come to the center here because it's a place where like-minded people can come together to practice meditation and hear Dharma talks. And so our ability to provide this service, it's without parallel. It's really unique that we could create a place, a community for people to come and get together every week for meditation, to get together every week to present lectures about Dharma, and to talk about how to apply meditation in everyday life. When I was at KTD this past week, Kempo Carter Rinpoche was asked about daily life applications of Dharma. And he was asked specifically about something called the mindfulness movement. You may have heard about this. There are a lot of people who are not Buddhist, but who are interested in human growth and human potential, and they're teaching a form of meditation called mindfulness to people in a non-religious context. People might go to a yoga class to learn about mindfulness, or they might go to a stress reduction class to learn about mindfulness. And this practice of mindfulness will look a lot to us like the practice of shamatha meditation, a quiet sitting meditation. And so as a result, it's shamatha without the Buddhist parts. It's about how to benefit oneself by calming the mind down, calming the mind. And someone came up to the microphone during Rinpoche's talk and said, well, you know, this mindfulness movement, don't you think it's kind of a disservice to Buddhism? Don't you think it does a disservice to Buddhism? Because after all, it takes the Buddhism out of something and makes it into something not Buddhist. And Rinpoche, at the age of 93, Kempo Rinpoche, you could say he's been around the block a few times. And he's lived in America for about 40 years. And so he knows a lot about American culture. And what he said was, I actually kind of like the mindfulness movement. And he says, and I don't mind that Buddhism has been removed from it. I don't mind. He said, and the reason for this is because when a person meditates, when they actually practice meditation and mindfulness, he said their mind calms down. And when their mind calms down, they may actually have an experience of their mind that is different from what they're used to. It will seem special to them. Special, this moment of quiet that arises in their mind when they're able to practice shamatha. It may allow them to experience their mind differently. And he said, and that might actually spark their interest in learning more. And if that experience of their mind sparks them into learning more about Buddhism, he said, that's good. So even if it doesn't spark an interest in Buddhism, even if it just is something that they can use to be happier, more sane people, it's to the good. So I feel as though what we do here at the KTC is you could call it a form of generosity. We come here every week, and people set the cushions out. Other people put the chairs together. Other people take care of the store and guide people through the various rooms of the temple here, and they open the mail. They answer the mail. They do all of these things in order to facilitate us being here every week to talk about Dharma and practice meditation together. So in a way, you could say the generosity has begun at home, has begun here already. So at any rate, I made a few notes about this earlier this week, and I'd like to share a little bit of that with you about generosity. Have you ever seen these very fancy stands that they make for cell phones? They're very, very fancy. Anyway. Hey, who knew? Who knew? I'm going to start by reciting the four-line refuge prayer in Tibetan. If this is a prayer with which you're familiar, feel free to join in. If it's a prayer with which you're unfamiliar, you can join in your heart and in your mind and dedicate this session to the benefit of all sentient beings. I'll recite the prayer one time. O Sanje Chudong So Chi Cho Nam La Chang Chu Pardu Dan Ni Kyap Su Chi Da Ji Jin So Ji Be Su Nam Ki Dro La Pen Shir Sanje Tru Pa. O Palden Sawe Lama Rinpoche Tagi Chi Or Pe De Ten Shula Kadrin Jembo Gone Che Sun Te Ku Sun Tugi Ngutrup Sao Duso. To the topic of generosity, in Buddhist teachings, they talk a lot about transformation, the transformation that takes place when one begins a life that is reflective or contemplative or mindful. When we practice meditation, we become more aware of our thoughts, more aware of our feelings, more aware of our emotions, and we begin to find ways to work with them and to transform them. A lot of the reasons, and this includes me, that people undertake the practice of meditation is because their thoughts, feelings, and emotions sometimes overpower them, and that they feel like they would like to find a better way to work with their minds. And that's what brought me to meditation, and it's what brings a lot of folks to meditation. But after the initial calming of the mind that happens through the practice of meditation, then comes the real work, the work of transformation. I know this is why some folks say that it's not good to break mindfulness apart from Buddhism, but I think it's going to be all right in the long run, because once we begin to see and experience our thoughts and feelings and emotions, we begin to get an inkling of how we might handle them, how we might work with them in a way that's different from the way we work with them now. When we first start practicing meditation, our thoughts appear to be like, I use the example, like a river of concrete. Like, we have to think them. We can't not think our thoughts. Like, if an oppressive thought or a negative thought arises to us, we feel an obligation to think that thought. But it's not necessarily the case that we have to. In fact, there was a young man who came to the microphone during Kempo Rinpoche's teaching at KTD last week who said, "I feel oppressed by my thoughts sometimes. What should I do?" And Kempo Rinpoche's answer was so brilliant. He said, "Well, you know," he said, "sometimes thoughts become habitual." But he said, it's not the true case that you have to think everything that arises in your mind. You don't have to repeat those thoughts day in and day out. You can actually make a different choice. He says, at first you don't think you have a choice, but he says you do. Because if you look at it logically, he said, you're not even the same person who had that thought yesterday. You're not even the same person. You've had some of your cells change over. Some of the way you think has changed over. And you don't necessarily have to have the same thoughts as you had yesterday out of some sense of duty or obligation. You actually can make a different choice. And I felt that that was such a brilliant way to introduce the idea of transformation. We can transform ourselves one thought at a time. If a thought arises in our mind on the meditation cushion, the discipline is to let go of that thought and to return our attention to the breath for a fresh start in meditation. And we do this over and over again. Another thought comes by and we let it go past, or if it distracts our attention, we let go of that thought and return our attention to the breath for a fresh start. The thought we let go of has nowhere to be, so it disappears. And in that way, we slowly and gradually create purposeful gaps in our thought stream, places and spaces where change can happen. If we are facing a thought or an emotion in our everyday life, and we make and we are made aware of that thought, like I'm feeling really impatient or I'm feeling really upset, we may not at first feel that we have the choice to change that, but gradually we do. We do have the choice. At first, we're going to fall for it every time. But after a while, we'll begin to say, wait a minute, I don't have to do this because I've learned how to let go of a thought. And then we can let go first of the easy ones, mild irritation. And then later, the deeper and deeper ones, such as resentment or unhappiness and so forth. But this is how change happens. As the bumper sticker says, you don't have to believe everything you think. I love that bumper sticker. It's one of my favorites. I think there's probably one on a car out in the parking lot. And so in this way, we can begin to make better choices about what we hold on our mind, what we see on our mind and hold on our mind. And we can begin to let go of the complex and negative mental afflictions that we experience. But we're not just letting go, letting go, letting go, letting go. We're actually taking hold also on the other side of things that are positive. The Buddha taught about what are called the six perfect virtues: generosity, ethics, patience, diligence, meditation, and wisdom. These six perfect virtues, if cultivated, help us to let go of negative ways of being and take hold of positive ways of being. If you go all the way back to the Buddha's basic teachings of the Four Noble Truths, he said that suffering is part of life, it has a cause, it has a solution, and there's a path that leads to the solution of suffering. If we look at that second noble truth, grasping and clinging, particularly to our self-concept, is a cause of suffering. It's not so much that we have a self, but that we cling to that self as being an absolute. So, what we do through the practice of the six perfect virtues is we begin to let go of self. We begin to let go of the, I guess you could call it the my way or the highway philosophy that our self-clinging leaves us with sometimes. If you've ever been in a discussion with someone, you'll know that sometimes you want to make your point, and you want to make your point so strongly that you talk over the other person. I know, I do it all the time, because I'm one of those. So what you have to do is you have to just tell me to take my time, be patient. And then hopefully that'll help me remember that I need to stand down and let other people talk. But the fact of the matter is, this is how change happens. When we can, for just one moment, let go of our interest in a situation. I frequently talk about that wonderful moment when I was having a conversation with my husband and we were disagreeing about something. And I suddenly realized what I was doing. And that it was all about nothing. So I just stopped. And he looked at me and he said, isn't there more? And I said, no, I'm ready to stop now. And he said, are you all right? And I said, it's just that I realized that you are right and I am wrong. And that's how I'm going to resolve this situation. You are right. I am wrong. And his attitude was very much to the point of, really? So at any rate, that moment just sticks in my mind as a great moment, because I was able to transform a habit I thought I couldn't change. In that moment, I made the choice to do something different. Unfortunately, we still have arguments, and I still won't let go of my point, which is so important because I'm so smart. which we all know is ridiculous. But it's kind of what we do as human beings. So as my buddies in 12-step like to say, progress, not perfection. Meaning that even if we can just make a little progress on our habitual tendencies in a given day, that we can walk away from that day feeling as though we have accomplished something positive. Because it really has to do with momentum, doesn't it? Rinpoche, during the teaching at the 10-day teaching this past week, he talked about momentum. He talked about momentum. And I want to share just one thing he said about momentum with you. He said that habit has us believe that we can't change. But if we can make one change, then that carries a new momentum. A new momentum. It sets the groundwork for the next moment of change, which sets groundwork for the next moment of change and so on. And in this way, we can slowly and gradually make change. But what are we going to put in place of not being self-absorbed? What are we going to put in place of that? We've got to have something. We have to have a plan. We can't let there be a vacuum, because then some other weird idea might sneak in, masquerading as a dharmic idea. So what the Buddha teaches us to do, and what he teaches us to fill that vacuum with, is these six virtuous actions: generosity, ethics, patience, diligence, meditation, and wisdom. You can see how they build one to the other. If we're generous, it's easy to be ethical. If we're generous and ethical, it's easy to be patient. And if we're generous, ethical, and patient, it's very easy to be diligent in our Dharma practice. And if we are generous and ethical and patient and diligent, meditation is a snap. And if we do all of those, then wisdom is the result. So they build on each other in a logical fashion. But the first of all of these is generosity. And I want to say a couple of things about generosity and how easy generosity can be. Even though the Buddhist texts talk about generosity as being manifold, it really comes down to three types. Physical generosity, the giving of things that people need. There's the generosity that is called the giving of fearlessness, where you help protect others from danger. And then finally, the generosity of Dharma, where you give Dharma to another. And all of those have subsections and subsections, and I won't be going into all of that today. But I want to talk just briefly about the practice of generosity from the standpoint of giving physical generosity in simple ways, giving Dharma in simple ways, and giving fearlessness in simple ways. Talking about virtue is a good start, but it's also important to take action as well. Otherwise, even virtue, that which conditions our mind with goodness and kindness and makes it possible for us to change our habits. That's what we're doing with everything. Every moment is we're conditioning our mind with something. If we're conditioning our mind with selfishness, we get that result. If we condition our mind with love and compassion, we get that result. So we have to take action on our thoughts because of virtue, because even virtue can remain theoretical. An intellectual idea that may touch us, but not change us. So it's recommended to start with the perfection of generosity as physical generosity. Kempo Rinpoche told me, he said, feed the birds. Feed the birds in your backyard, because they don't come up and knock on the window and say, thank you. You learn to give without expectation of a result. And so that was a simple way to practice generosity. Then in terms of the generosity of Dharma, he said, if somebody asks you a question about the Dharma and you know the answer, you should give that answer. Don't be overly modest saying, well, I'm not a teacher, I can't answer your question. He said, if someone asks you a question and you know the answer, then give that answer. It is generosity of Dharma. To withhold that or not do that is not the practice of generosity. So we have to, I guess in a little way, we have to sort of get over our shyness. But there are other ways to practice as well. The giving of fearlessness, there's an easy way to practice the giving of fearlessness. It's called smiling. Smiling. Now, you might say, how is the giving of a smile the rescuing of someone from danger? It's not really actually the rescuing of someone from danger. It's not the same as pulling someone out of a flooded lake or taking an insect out of the path of being stepped on or helping someone who is in danger of death or injury. It's not the same. But giving a smile to someone is a way of lifting their spirits. It's a way of reminding them that they are not alone and that you see them, that you see them. I think it's really interesting, isn't it? We all need to be seen. We all need to be seen and to be accepted. And I know some of us get a little shy, and it's hard to look someone in the eye. I know it's not easy, but the smile makes it a little easier. Because when we give someone a smile, it means that we see them and know them. And as the great song says, that great song, "It's a Wonderful World," I see people passing by saying, "How do you do?" What they're really saying is, "I love you." We know that each other is present. We know that each other is here. And we see one another. How often when we pass by something we don't want to see, we turn away. And it always makes me feel a little bit of shame when I turn away from someone in pain or when I turn away from somebody who needs me. It makes me feel a little bit of shame because I'm not strong enough for that. But someday I make the aspiration. Even when I have to turn away because it's too much, I say, someday may I have the strength to address this person and their situation. May that happen for me. So being able to see and know one another is so important, especially now. Because there was a wonderful article about what life was like before the internet. Before the internet, we would hang out together and talk and debate the issues of the day. Before the internet, we would actually see one another or call one another on the phone and have a discussion about things. And now that the internet is part of our lives, we don't always take advantage of what one person called the original social network. I saw a lovely advertisement in, of all places, the airport in Wichita, Kansas, of a group of campers around a campfire. And it was promoting what they called the original social network. People around the campfire singing. The idea is that anything that where we can see one another and connect to one another gives us humanity. It adds to our humanity, our ability to see and know and be with each other and to see one another not as obstacles, not as oppositions, but as people who go through and experience and feel just like us. Anything we can do to connect ourselves to others is a good thing. As you know, I enjoy going to plays. And I went to a play in Newark, my little town, a few weeks ago. And they were experimenting with a new style of theater in which the audience is interacted with by members of the cast. The name of the play was The Children of Eden. It's a Stephen Schwartz play. Anybody who knows his work knows Wicked and Godspell. But it was lovely because the actors came right up and looked at us and spoke to us and sang to us. My friend Joyce and I were very brave, and we sat on the stage. And we were one of the only eight people in that audience of 150 or 200 who agreed to be interacted with by actors. And it was delightful. And I got to see them afterwards, and one of the actresses said to me, "We loved working with you. We loved working with you. You gave us something to work with." And I thought to myself, that is something we always have to give to one another. It's not just about acting. It's not just about entertainment. We have something to give to one another, and that thing we give to one another is our presence and our understanding. And so you could say that that is a form of generosity, our presence, our understanding, and our acceptance, our willingness to be vulnerable, our willingness to not know, our willingness to go beyond self into relationship with somebody else, and for that relationship to be built on affection and our shared humanity. And so this has been a little bit of an introduction to the idea of generosity. We have to go beyond ourselves to reach out to another person. We have to go beyond our closed idea of what is acceptable and what is good, and see what is acceptable and good in other people. And that is something we can do. And meditation allows us to do this. Meditation allows us to reach out. Otherwise, we would be so busy thinking about ourselves, about our own problems, our own difficulties, our own things that we lack, things that we want and can't get. We would be so overwhelmed with all of this thinking about ourselves that we wouldn't be able to be aware of the suffering of other people. Not seeing the suffering of other people is very difficult. Recently, I had the honor of going to Toronto to see His Holiness Karmapa. My mission in going to see His Holiness was to get a few minutes of his time to ask for help for the Columbus KTC. I attended several of his public lectures and then was given 1 minute in his presence. And in that 1 minute, I gave my best elevator speech as to why the Columbus KTC needed help. I said to him, our center burned down. We need help. Will you please, you're an artist, will you please give us some calligraphies that we could auction and make some money? And he said, I will see you at KTD. It took a lot of courage for me to put myself forward for this because other people were doing it and I felt so shy. I felt kind of like, well, I'm not important and I shouldn't be asking for his time, but you know, I had to. It was why I went, was to get that short period of time. And so one of the things that he talked about in his lectures in Toronto was the fact that we have to see one another. We have to see. He said, yes, there is poverty in this world, and yes, the planet is being poisoned by us. And these are very important issues. But he said, I have to tell you the thing I'm most worried about right now. And he said, and that's a lack of love in this world. We don't love one another. We find reasons to dislike one another. And then we build on those reasons and build and build and build until we've built walls between one another. He said, this lack of love is what will destroy the world faster than anything else. Faster than global warming, faster than anything is our lack of love. He said, we must repair this. We must fix this now. So it struck me when I was trying to think of what to talk about today. It struck me that I wanted to be able to share this short statement from His Holiness about the dangers of lack of love and the importance of being able to practice love and compassion for one another. And that's when smiling brought itself to my mind. Just smiling. Just being able to, for one moment, come outside of ourselves and our story and offer something so simple. So simple. So small that it almost seems unnecessary or too small, mundane, whatever. But if we can give that little thing this week, so that's my recommendation for you this week, is smile at yourself in the mirror, at the people that you live with and love, that you work with and care for. Make sure you smile at least a little bit at them. And I also want to take this opportunity to invite you to be part of what we do here at KTC when we welcome and smile and invite other people. On our tables over here are sign-up sheets for being a greeter or being part of our hospitality team. It does ask for you to be take a little sacrifice, skipping a teaching or skipping a puja or skipping something so that you can be present for those who don't know where we are, who don't know what we do, who don't know who we are, but want to find out. And if this is something you can do to help us put the coffee on the table, to help us bring the cookies and to take out what we have and to clean up what we have. And if you could do that for us, it would be so helpful. Our core leadership has been doing a lot of greeting lately, and it would be so great if they had some help. They're trying to rebuild the center, and it would be so great if we could support them so that they could have some time to do the work they're doing to help us rebuild. And so in a way, you could say that by greeting, handing name badges to people, and helping give them a cup of coffee. It's a simple act, but it will actually help rebuild the center in lots of ways, in the interpersonal, social network way, and in freeing the core leadership so that they can undertake the work that they have to do for us. So anyway, just thought I would toss that idea out as well, because I didn't want to let that opportunity slip by. Because I've done greeting for the KTC, and I love it. And I'm hoping that everybody can gain a little bit from that as well. But I could go on and on and on. You know me. I love to talk. But now, this is your time. We have about 15 minutes. For questions, and we have a question microphone. You can feel free to just step up to the microphone. Thank you, Joseph, and thank you, Ron. And if you want to talk about smiling or the social network or the internet or generosity or meditation or ask a question about anything else, please feel welcome to do that. Like I said, it's been an interesting 10 days. I was away for 10 days at the 10-day teaching, and it's always a very rich time. Marilyn, who's up teaching right now, the introductory class, was with me, and we did a lot of T-shirt table time. And so it was a really lovely opportunity. And Rinpoche's doing well, and he says hello. And Kenpo Tenkyong had this, like, super wacky idea. He said, I got a super wacky idea. He said, why don't we... Oh, he didn't call it super wacky. I called it super wacky. He says, wouldn't it be great if we could get Rinpoche over there to teach? He said, I'll ask him. So we'll see. I don't know. Rinpoche said he would come if we dedicated the new building, but why wait? I'm just saying. So we're going to put that forward. I'll be seeing Karmapa this week at KTD for about 5 minutes. I get 5 minutes for my elevator speech. He's visiting KTD very briefly on a private visit this week, and I get to see him. They say 5 minutes, but I'll be lucky if I get another minute. Because they've got, I've seen his schedule. They've got him completely jammed. They invited all of the teachers who are on the KTD approved teachers list to be part of a special meeting with His Holiness about strengthening the KTCs. So I'm going to be there for that 20-minute meeting and for my 5-minute meeting. And hopefully, I mean, I'm going to be away for like 5 days, but I'm going to hopefully make the best use I can of that time that I'm there. So anyway, so question time, question, any kind of question. Yeah, we have a customer. Hi, Olivia. How's it going? This is the aerobic portion.
Okay. Can you guys hear me? Okay, good. So I've been working on like some bad habits recently, and I know that I like fall into distraction fairly easily, like when I'm doing
what?
Work and stuff. Sometimes I'll like distract myself for a little bit, and then I'll like lose myself.
Right.
So I was just wondering like how to work on that, because I know it's like a bad habit. So I'm like trying to get better at it.
Yeah.
And not distract myself so much. So
yeah.
I just need a little encouragement.
I totally get that. There's a song I heard recently where somebody was talking about being abandoned to distraction. Abandoned to distraction to, you know, so that we realize that we don't see what's really going on. Ooh, sudden realization. In order to forget, we waste our lives, drowning in wine. That's the line of the song. So it's like, ooh. So I think what it means to me is that we do have the tendency to think that somewhere else is better than where we are. And that's the key piece of distraction, is that where we are and who we are right now isn't good enough. I have bad news for you. We live in the United States, the world of advertising. When I was in grade school, they taught us that advertising makes us feel dissatisfied, that somehow we don't have enough of something and that we have to go buy that product so we can get their thing and have enough. And so what I do when I get distracted, which is squirrel all the time, I try to recite a mantra when I feel the impulse to be distracted, so that at least I am practicing a little bit of Dharma for 10 seconds before I give in to my distraction. And I think that this is the thing to do, is to condition yourself to take a pause before you grab that distraction. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
This means we have to be somewhat aware of our tendency for distraction and also somewhat motivated to resolve it. And what we'll get when we attempt to do this is we'll get like 95% of distraction will get the better of us. And we'll only catch 5% and practice before we give in to the distraction. But wow, again, we were talking about momentum. When we give in to distraction 100% of the time without any Dharma mediation, that's what we've got. But if we give in only 95% of the time, that's a little time we've taken away from compulsive distraction. Does that make sense? So that's kind of what I would do, is pick an exercise to do when you feel the impulse to grab your phone or to do something. And it could be that will be a breath, a mindful breath or two, and so forth. Or it will be a moment of reflection. I take on the distraction of all beings. using the philosophy of Tonglen. I take on the distraction of all beings and this distractedness I feel right now. Or it could also be the practice of mantra. Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, Om Mani Padme Hum, which is the compassion mantra. It's a great one to do, especially if you think that as you say it, each of the syllables of the mantra is counteracting one of the six negative mental afflictions that cause us to be distracted and cause us to crave distraction. And I think that being able to practice at least a little shamatha every day will help us also. That'll be like a baseline of mindfulness. It'll provide us with a baseline of mindfulness that we can then draw upon to engage this remedy when distraction. I know, I'm fighting it too. A lot of people are disabling parts of their cell phones. They're disabling notifications so that they're not notified of new things. I'm not there yet, but I want to be there. That's my goal. My goal is to be able to let go of notifications. I'm not ready, but it's going to happen. It's going to have to. I've actually met people who are so disciplined that they will not look at their cell phone until a certain time of day.
Wow. That's impressive.
I know. And so my guess is that like anything else, we've taken new technology and overdosed on it. And now we have to kind of like walk backward.
It's so hard.
So I feel for what you're saying.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks. No. Other stuff that people might want to talk about. Okay, so then we will sit and meditate for just a few minutes, maybe 2-3 minutes. We'll reflect for just a moment on the importance of being generous to ourselves and others, and make an aspiration to be of benefit and generous to others. So we'll conclude by dedicating the goodness of our session today and being able to be together to the continued health and well-being of the Dharma in this world, all of the teachers and all of the students. We dedicate this merit to all beings, and especially those who are trying to practice Dharma. May we get stronger and do better. And may all beings everywhere be freed from suffering, come to Buddhahood, and then from there may they emanate in all directions and benefit beings endlessly. We dedicate the goodness with this thought in mind. Okay, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you.